in the nature of I.O. and moving on, one of the things I'd like to do now is my specific pleasure to introduce Dr. David Du from the University of Minnesota and currently from the National Science Foundation for his discussions involving principally the area of requirements and insights and perspectives that deal with the management of ultra-large-scale data collections with respect to, as your agenda sees, is end-to-end security, provenance, and very critical areas that deal with the effective utilization of information both at scale but also over time. So with that, Dr. Du.
First of all, I would like to thank Bob, Susan, and Madina for the chance to share with you some of the work we do at Intelligent Storage Consortium. This is actually funded by a number of companies and also DOE, Gary Grider, and NSF have some funding into this too. I'm actually also amazed listening to Mike's talk on HDF. You know, for my ignorance, it's the first time I heard HDFS. You will find out, you know, how close my talk to that. Okay. So my talk of the outline is, you know, we are facing this brand new communication environment. There are challenges. A lot of this you probably know already. I will fairly quick go over them. And I think there's a promising approach, and it's related to HDFS. And also the same as we called object-oriented storage device. Okay, you will find out how close they are. And we'll talk a little bit of the industrial support and the standard development. In fact, SNIA is an industrial group. They really are supporting this OSD concept. If I have time, I talk a little bit of several projects we do at DISC, which is DTC. Intelligent Storage Consortium, and offer some conclusions fairly quick. We all know the Internet today is growing crazy, right? There's lots of more nodes being put in. You know, everybody's linked up to the Internet, but that's not the most important thing. I think if you're looking at what do we do, this is part of my job at NSF. I'm in charge of the Sensor Networks Program. So we really instrument and connecting the world. So you know, 10 years from now, we probably have 100 times more nodes. Those are the sensor nodes. And those are the nodes representing the physical systems. They will link up through the Internet. And clearly, there are a bunch of critical applications. That's the reason we're doing this. And we're doing more and more so, right? So if you're thinking of this, there will be lots of data is going to be produced automatically by those sensors. I think Chris mentioned you know, some of the big devices do this, collecting huge amount of data. The small device does that too. You know, you can sample the environment every second, okay, and you can see how much data you're going to collect. And looking at how many devices we have is just going to be tremendous amount of data, okay. So if you're looking at this from the sensor network point of view, I have been running this program for 2 years up to this point, I really thinking we got to think of the, you know, rethink of the layering we have. In some sense, this is the dissect of what the sensor network is trying to do. It's linking a very important application, including a lot of ingredients in here, and to a small device, okay? And, you know, naturally, we have to get the performance. We got to make the right kind of decision, what data to keep, what data to throw out. And in order to do that, we got to rethink the layers we have. So this is one thing I feel very strongly. We are at the junction. We got to think, what are the network layers? What are the data management layers we have? All these issues going to be so critical. So you can also look at we go for the global village, right? Those just going to be huge amount of data floating around, and some of them needs to be preserved for 100 years. Some of them needs to be thrown away, and some of them needs to be delivered to the right place, to the right person, and the right place and the right person is hard to define, okay? And those are the things we're really facing. I think there's one slide Chris showed is also I used in here. The growth rate of the data is going to be much bigger probably going to be faster than what we have ever seen. Of course, this most will be dominated by a number of different factors in here. This slide, I think Chris Greer showed this slide. We are really run out of the storage space. Even the storage space is cheap. Okay, you know, but the amount of data we produce is bigger than that. So we're drowning by all the data. We got to throw something out. We don't know what to throw out. So the challenge in this environment, if you look at it, is we need to go from the data to the information, right? We need to identify the correct information, the useful information we wanted to access. That's a challenge. And we want to go from the information to knowledge. That's another level of challenges. We all know that. There are lots of effort has been put in here. The network is no longer end-to-end. This is one of the reasons I highlighted in my talk. The end-to-end aspect is no longer exist. Well, for many applications today, if you're thinking of the sensor data, we just don't know where to deliver that data. Who wants that? We have no idea. And we cannot know the end. And as a user, I'm sitting here for one reason I wanted to access the data. I don't know where the data is. And that's why we go to Google to do a preliminary type of search. I think the infrastructure ought to support all this kind of things. So the security, privacy, long-term data preservation, those are also the issues really coming up. You know, we have to decide what to do with them, right? None of them we have a perfect solution today. Okay, this is the slides we used for CyberTrust. In fact, we're looking at a several generation of the security problem we try to solve. You know, the first generation, you can see we try to build this trust base and identify different components, put into more access control, and, you know, enhance the physical security. The crypto stuff gets really used, and the first time gets used. And then we're looking at the second generation, looking at the intrusion detection part, and in some sense trying to limit the damage when we under a large-scale attacks. So the third phase, we're trying to say we can still operating under the attacks, right? And there are more technology is developed. In some sense, if you look at the portfolio of a cyber truck, there are lots of work has been done. We'll get at the data and the storage part a little bit later, but the fourth generation we're looking at is potentially we can identify using the intel to know that the information being monitored and collected, to know where the source of the problem, we can correct that. If there's an attack, we can identify who did that, and we can attribute it to the you know, the attackers some way. So this is the four phases we're looking at it in the cybersecurity part. Now, if you're looking at the data part has different aspects, right? The data at rest is going to be quite a different from most of the work we talk about in here. The data at rest quite often are really could be a problem for the insider. We needed to really watching the insider attacks for the data at rest. The data for the long-term preservation, you know, after 50 years, you still want to access that data. That data have to be even you're looking at it, may not be the security problem, maybe the be rotten issues and so on. You needed to make sure the data integrity exists. And, of course, you needed to be able to access the data created 50 years ago. That's going to be extremely hard to do. So those are the things we are facing on the data part of this. The privacy issue is always coming together with the security. On one instance, we want a privacy. In another instance, we want a security. I'll give you a very simple example. If you have a pacemaker, you wear a pacemaker, then, you know, for normal conditions, you don't want anybody to know where you are. And you wanted to preserve the location privacy because you don't know people. You don't want people to know where you are. And if you under heart attack, you wanted to revoke that privacy concern instantly. You wanted to let everybody know where you are they can come to rescue you, okay? So the security and privacy sometimes really needs to be looked at, you know, see whether we have a coherent approach for that. My feelings in general, when we really moving into this, we have a lot of applications needs privacy. We have a lot of applications needs security. Clearly, the security for each person can be different. For each application of a different person can be different also. And, you know, you may have to go between the privacy and the security in an instant. Something occurs, you got to change that right away. So that have to be something we have to look at very carefully. There's has been a workshop on data privacy issues and so on held by NSF. There are many issues. If you're simply looking at it, the data already being collected, there's also the dynamic sense coming into from the sensor data we're collecting. Are the data just generated now, and what kind of privacy issues we needed to cover, that really becomes very interesting and important. So this is the examples. Washington, D.C. area try to put up lots of cameras. I think some of the places like Britain, they already done some of this, and there will be privacy issues really popping out because there's some reason, you know, it can track people where they are and so on. So coming back to this point, it's both the storage system we are facing today and also the networking system we are facing today. We needed to go back to re-examine the layering. We needed to go back to define what is a network, what is the mission of this network, what is the mission of the storage systems. In some sense, if you're asking a network researchers, I'm one of them too, 95% people are going to tell you we do end-to-end delivery. Okay? But for a lot of this instance, this new application coming in, we really don't know the end. We don't know where to begin. We don't know where to end. So those are the challenges we're facing. One promising approach coming back in is we may want to put into more intelligence into the drives. This doesn't have to be a drive. This could be a storage system. Could be implemented at a RAID controller level. Could be implemented totally in software. This is really consistent with what HDF is trying to do. If you're looking at some of the things I list out in there, we view this storage device, our storage system, can be plugged into the whole infrastructure. You know, if I run out of space, I just plug in one more. You know, the data will flow into that device because the location is not important in this case at all. And we wanted to have this network connections, could it be IP network connections. We wanted to have execution environment on top of this. We wanted to have search engine. We wanted to have a query indexing capability on this storage device. One of the reasons we're trying to do that, instead of taking a HDF approach, I think all the things Mike talked, we're really interested in that. But I think for the performance reason, we want to migrate to the lowest layer. We want to get rid of a lot of layers. If the storage device at the lowest layer have this kind of capabilities, then our job to do a number of different things can be much easier. Okay, so that's really the approach we're looking at. You know, we of course also zooming on the object-oriented modeling in that sense. I think there's good challenges coming back in. The storage industry is kind of behind this, but kind of lukewarm also because they're really thinking of the backward compatibility. Who is going to buy this? Who is going to use this? I'm very excited to know there. Lots of application, well, at least some application has been already done on the HDF. You can really see the similarity between these two. In some sense, we can easily taking HDF, put onto a disk drive, or put this into a storage system to enable and have this kind of performance at the meantime to enable different kind of functionalities of this. And Seagate has done some prototyping and I don't know, you don't have a product, right? I mean, you will have products, okay, based on the OSD. But the concept, also the next thing I wanted to say, you know, since I'm faculty, I'm doing my research, I feel the T10 standards needs to be expanded a lot more because we really face all this challenge, and the way to solve that is really putting more functionalities into the lowest level to have the performance also at the kind of functionality, we can reduce the number of layers we need. You know, over the years, we have adding middlewares, one after another, okay, both at the networking side, also on the storage side, especially on the networking side. I think we are really creating, you know, it's not just 7 layers. We're creating 15 layers already, and there will be the problem of scalability and all kinds of issues popping out from that. So we really look at this global file system architecture. In some sense, this is content-driven instead of, you know, IP, you know, IP address-driven, or instead of something else. So if I'm looking for something, I can send out a query based on the content. If I know the file ID, I can send out that file ID. There will be a global unified ID for each piece of data we put out. There's a lot of challenges in here, right? So basically, you form this into different regions, and you're asking queries to the network. So we're asking queries to the Google today, and the Google doesn't do a terribly good job. But on the other hand, if we can query this to the network will be able to, capable to deliver this to multiple layers of places, eventually collect the data back to us. Not only that, right, what do we do today on a server is we're collecting all the data, then we filter them out, right? That's going to waste a lot of network bandwidth. But if we can deliver this query to the storage system filter out the data for us, and they simply give us back to the potential relevant information, the relevant data, then save a lot of time. But clearly, this have to redesign the storage system, redesign the network. I think we are at the junction we should be really thinking of this. In a way, you know, I'm working on the networking programs where field proposal is this kind of boat. But on the other hand, we have this huge project we do called a Genie, and still designed by networking people, they're still looking at end-to-end. Okay, so I think Genie is not bold enough. We really need to thinking what's going to be the network we're going to face if we have 100, 1,000 times more nodes and they produce huge amount of data continuously. How do we do with that? Okay, this promising approach, I just wanted to summarize some of the ingredients in here. You really see this is the same as HDF has identified. We think that the data, metadata, the semantic information, got it to come together. You know, we cannot store them, some of this into the database, some of them into different places. We have a hard time to preserve this data. When we do the backup, we have to go to, you know, a dozen places to really collect all this data in order to do that. And that's just not going to work out. The other thing is we think the data storage, whatever we call it, OSD or different type of things, HDF, have to have indexing, have to have search query capabilities. This is, may not be the full functioning search, but got it to have something, because the amount of data we have on a single disk drive is already beyond 1 terabyte. If you have 1 terabyte of data, you have no indexing, you have no search capability, you are looking at troubles, okay? So I think that got to be there. Then the network is delivering data based on the content and the queries, not based on the IP address, or identify which files under this IP address. So basically, all the routers come together, you know, have the search engine capabilities. So you are looking at the data can be routed, the query can be routed based on the content, and we can access that data directly once we identify where the data is located. And the internet, the whole thing is like a global file system. This is the final goal. I think eventually we may reach to that, maybe, you know, who knows, 20, 30 years down the road. The data location should be totally transparent. If I need a piece of data, that piece of data cannot be delivered to me on time because of real-time concern, then the data should be replicated and located in a close-by place. And, you know, how many copies I should have and so on, those are going to be policy-driven. The policy-driven file system will enforce the security, privacy, and the reliability and availability issues. I think, I'm sure the HDF folks are looking at exactly the same thing, right? So I think to my surprise, really, you know, we are thinking along the same line. And the object storage device does has industry support, but I would say some of the functions I mentioned before are not included in the T10 OSD standards. You know, I wish the industry can move faster than what we can really looking at it today. But nonetheless, they always worry about who is going to buy this and how do we break into the system. The other point I would like to say, because I work mostly with the storage folks, and you know, how do we really build application to demonstrate this kind of capability? I'm sure that the HDF are facing the same issue. How do you demonstrate if I have this function, this type of function, this will be tremendously benefited to my mission? That's really something we have to chip in more efforts trying to do that. In fact, in the OSD model, the security can be more or less enhanced, because every data object, you're going to have access control in there, and potentially you can protect that much better. You know, the security issue, the scalability issue can be resolved more or less from this type of storage systems. And we're also looking at the improved performance, since this is really coming down to the storage system. So in some sense, you know, the storage system is going to be much more powerful. This is actually true for looking at all the things we have done in the past. You know, if you're asking yourself how a DVD player today is going to cost like $10, $20. And the only reason, if you look at that device, they have a single chip on the device, and they have integrated so many different functions into that single chip. So that's why they enable the cost coming down. That's why they enable, you know, a lot of capability into that single chip. And we really see, you know, we needed to rethinking of all this layering, because this layering has been done 40 years ago. This is way too long. Compare the kind of application we have today with, you know, even 10, 20 years ago, what kind of application we are facing. So this is actually very simple. You just put the HDF on top of the storage system. Then we have this OSD, we call it, and adding a couple things, you know, indexing, search engine, and, you know, all those are doable. It's not the case we cannot do this. We can do this rather quickly. We just need some more funding and more implementation out of this. And as Mike also mentioned, the set of tools coming together needs to be there too. So really, when we look at this, is we got it to bring in the object aspect on top of the file system, and the object will bring in the metadata information out of this. The information and knowledge are going to be capturing those attributes, and the attributes can be extended very easily in this object model. You can add in more attribute there. You can even record it down who accessed this piece of data, and so on. So there are many potentials we haven't really explored using extended attributes and so on. This is borrowed from Sammy. We just had a workshop, intelligent storage workshop, at Minnesota, and Sammy presented this. This is, looks like ISO standards for data preservation, and you can see this is actually going to be on top of the OSD device. I will not go into a lot of details. I'm running out of my time fairly quick. There's Xen. This is extended, extensible access method. It's on top of that to do some the indexing and make this into a single platform and so on. I'm amazed to see the storage industry are doing very similar stuff with HDF organizations and so on. You know, for the kind of application we are doing research, we look at the how the database combined with OSD device, because OSD device more or less are handling unstructured data type. The database are handling more the structured data types. This two needs to be covered together. The data provenance can be coming as part of the extended attributes. And, of course, there are other things can be there, too. The other thing that becomes very important is going to be the metadata server, because how do you identify where the data is going to be? and the metadata server have to have some metadata information plus the security management. And we're also looking at the long-term key management there. And how do we scale the metadata server to the level we can handle, you know, 1,000 times bigger the internet we have today? That's a challenge. I think it's potentially doable, especially if you're thinking put this together with the routers. Right now, we're putting metadata server as a server separate out and in the network. The performance may suffer from that. But if you're thinking of integrating the routers together with the metadata server, you have something really powerful. I think we're really looking at that opportunity also. Search and indexing in all the storage devices are going to be very important. We're also looking into some of the power management systems for storage system or for the data center and those kind of things. So I think, based on the time I have in here, we actually done an OSD implementation based on the T10. There's a couple companies also doing that. I think IBM has done one. Seagate clearly has done something. They are even implementing on the disk drive they have. As I said, I personally would see this OSD standard is extended to cover more features. I at least going to be cover the features the HDF already have, you know, and we need to go beyond that too, okay? And we have an NSF-funded project working on the storage security and long-term key management. In some sense, if you look at enterprise customers, they are in a hard place, okay? One side, they want all the employee to encrypt the data. On the other side, once the employee encrypt the data, they have no control of the key, they lost the data, okay? So how do you really enforce this in a transparent manner? And how do you manage keep track of all those keys, you know, 50 years down the road? That's really a challenge. If you're asking the crypto folks, I ask them a lot of time, they all say the key distribution problem already been solved. And you're asking the file system storage people, they say, no way, okay? We don't know how to do this. We cannot really do this, okay? So there are quite a bit of issue in here. We're also working on the data center power management system. The other things we're looking at is really the solid-state drives, the flash drives, how that really being benefited in a high-end computing environment because there are a lot of caching can do. But on the other hand, there are special bottleneck for the flash drive we have to watch for. And we're also working with a number of companies on the data encoding and the deduplication efforts in here. So we'll not go into the detail. I'll probably jump into my conclusions. Those are on the web. You can actually take a look at those. Okay, so the conclusion I have is current system we have, both networking and the computer system, was designed 40 years ago. Really, we got to ask ourselves what kind of storage system we wanted today. And, my view of this is go beyond what the OSD gets defined today. But all this are doable. It's not something we don't know how to do it. This is actually a conceptual level things. We're partitioning the problem into a different ways. And that should be the case. And the internet today have to be redesigned. But it's different from the genie, as I indicate to you. You know, I'm not wearing my NSF hat. Otherwise, I should say genie is a great project. Okay, today I'm representing University of Minnesota. So I can say the internet needs to be redesigned. We haven't really have a grasp on how we redesign this. You know, basically, I really don't feel we have end-to-end. We are go beyond end-to-end today, and this is coming more and more so. Then last week we have a speaker, Frank Allen from IBM. She gave a beautiful presentation. So I think at the end I'm trying to summarize what she said. She's questioning whether the next generation general purpose computer should exist, and whether we should start to go back to looking at some of the special purpose CPU with functional language support. because that's the only way we produce more reliable softwares. The software have to be restricted to high-level languages, really high, much higher level than what we have today. And the computer needs to support different type of functions. We went through that route before, and then we consolidated everything into a general-purpose CPU, and now we may have to ask that question again from time to time. I think this is maybe the right timing to ask that question. Okay, let me stop in here and see whether you have any questions.